my take on this is that every person has a ignorance tax that they have to pay down. So no matter what your goals are, there's a price that you have to pay to learn to get to your goals quicker. And by living in San Francisco, New York, some of these places, yes, it might be 2 times more expensive to live, but you will, just by osmosis, pay down your ignorance debt way, way, way faster. Jice Cream is back.
Hey, time to sip.
Time to sip.
Ah!
You haven't been on the show in like 3 weeks, so you're just like super, super electric about it.
I was so sick. I got COVID, got that bat flu right in my brain, and it really messed me up. It just stopped me from being sharp. There's nothing more scary as an entrepreneur, especially if you're running your own businesses, than your brain moving slower than usual. I don't know if you've ever had something like that where you get sick or something happens and you become more stupid.
No, nothing. My brain is never slow and is never stupid. It just hasn't happened ever yet.
That's just the standard speed for you, right?
I just take a sip and I'm back yeah, where I need to be.
Yeah. Well, you Americans, right? I was really thinking about that this week. You Americans are all like, you've got this Zyn stuff.
Yeah.
I actually don't know if it's a patch or if it's a chewing gum.
No, Zyn is the rage in America. It's basically like it looks like a piece of gum and people put it like on their lip. It's just like, it's a nicotine thing.
It's a little bag that you put up here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A lot of people in the Nordic countries use that too, but not for productivity because, hey, guess what? Nobody from Nordic companies is going to be watching, or countries is going to be watching this show for productivity ain't the thing. But yeah, I was literally like, maybe I need to start taking some of these powerful concoctions of stuff that Americans take to get work done. But yeah, in the end, I just ended up waiting till I didn't have COVID anymore. But I do have some fun topic. I do have one main topic for you today. I think it's like, when I saw this and I've been looking into it for a couple of weeks, I was thinking, okay, your audience, a couple of people in your audience are going to be smart enough and hustly enough to take this and actually turn this into a business. And it's based on, I'm in a couple of different entrepreneurial groups. And one of the groups I was in, I was listening to the call last week. Again, I was like out of my head with COVID, just like slow, sweaty, whatever. But I was listening to this woman and she was getting help with a marketing challenge. She was talking for a while. And eventually I was just like, I'm really sorry. Do you mind if I ask you how much your coaching program costs? And she said, oh, yeah, it's $38,000 per year. And I was like, what the fuck? How? And the reason I was so shocked is because what she's selling is she's selling a program. It's not an online course. It's like a kind of 1-year program of coaching to teachers who don't want to be teachers anymore and who want to transition out of that career into being something else. And then I was like, okay, wait a minute. There are a lot of different careers that people are in, and they probably don't know that they can take their skills and turn them into something else and get a different job. A lot of people get burnt out from teaching. A lot of people realize, like, from their perspective, when it's too late, that they actually don't like it. And it's a super, super popular thing for people if you look at it. So I started Googling it then. I looked at her website. Maybe I shouldn't tell people about her specific website on this thing because I'm sharing things from within my entrepreneur group that would be maybe get me kicked out of that group. But there's a couple of companies that do something like this. For example, if you just start Googling teacher transition, new career, there's one called Teaching Transition Academy. There's things like that. And these are super high ticket programs where not all of them are high ticket. Some of them are lower ticket, but where essentially, you know, a team of people will help you figure out what you can do next. And what I love about it is that this is something that, so I run a company called ajandsmart.com. We help people become facilitators. And we realize one of the most powerful things that we do is we help people go from where they are, which is usually like product management, UX design, project management, to something, well, more like facilitation, which is what they specifically want to do. But looking at this, I was like, you could literally take almost any job, like nursing, teaching, I still think is really underserved. I was looking at it. You could even look at consultants who go and work at McKinsey and then realize they don't like it. You could also look at things that are getting like laid off, like product managers. Really think about how could you actually help this person get in? And especially if they're later in life, maybe they don't, they already have a family, maybe they're already kind of locked down to where they live. How could you actually find something that could help these people, a program that could help these people? Or could you figure out an easy thing that they could retrain themselves on? And honestly, that can be a killer business. And I was just shocked when I was talking to her and she was like, $38,000. Teachers pay $38,000, usually spread out over the 12 months. But I was completely shocked that this was, I honestly expected her to say maximum $3,000. Maximum.
Hey everyone, if you're anything like me, you've got a ton of design work that you need. Websites, landing pages, emails, social assets, you name it. But you don't just want beautiful landing pages or beautiful websites. You want the stuff that's going to convert. You want the stuff that's going to actually drive value. That's where designscientist.com comes in. It's an agency that for one monthly price will do all your design work, all your copy work, all your engineering, and do stuff that actually scales your revenue. You don't need a designer. You need a design scientist. Let's go. Designscientist.com. I liked it so much, I invested in the business. So what you're saying is there's a bunch of careers that, I mean, most careers, honestly, people don't like. There's a subsection of people who don't like what they're doing. And there's an opportunity to get those people to create content, to attract those people, and then sell coaching and other services to help them transition from what they're doing to what they want to be doing. That's what you're saying.
I think there's a couple of nuances to it that I would focus on if I was starting this business. I'd focus on people who already have kids, who are already settled down where they live. Maybe their kids are just like starting to move out. Maybe they're starting to realize maybe this career isn't for me. So I wouldn't be targeting anybody like under 45, or maybe like it would be more like 40 and above. They'll also have more money to spend as well. So there'll be more, they'll have felt the pain also of being in the industry that they don't like for a long period of time. And so I think that's why teaching is such an amazing target. Like teachers often, I know a lot of teachers, they get to the certain point when they're like 35, 36, 37. My sister, for example, when she was 33, she transitioned into facilitation. I think it takes a while for them to realize, oh shit, like my salary is going to go up really slowly. I can already see, I already know what my salary is going to be when I'm retiring. And this is what it's going to be like forever. And I think there are a lot of different jobs like that. Teaching is just one of the most obvious, but immediately for me, what I'm always thinking is, what would I do if AJ and Smart failed? And one of the most obvious things after hearing the price of her coaching program was, well, I'd probably look for jobs that people feel stuck in. I do feel like it has to be the pain that they have to feel is that they're stuck and that their skills are not transferable, right? You don't want to be targeting like people like you and me who are like full stack marketer entrepreneurs who can kind of do anything. You want to be targeting people who spent their entire year building towards one career and their entire life building towards one career. And then you can actually help them gain the confidence to move back into the market, into something different. So I think it's like a career coach on Zin, you know?
It's a career advisor. In. Exactly. That's a good one-liner.
Yeah. And like, okay, so how do you build this business? Literally, especially if you're not a teacher. If I was building this, Well, first of all, you would ideally find a teacher as your potentially as your co-founder, a teacher who's already transitioned out. Another thing is, so literally in one day, first I would Google the shit out of it. I would look at all the Quora posts. I was already doing this today. Looking at all the Quora questions about how to transition out of teaching, looking at all the Reddit posts about how to transition out of teaching, looking at all the different things people are doing, then I'd reach out to a lot of the people who've been posting, ask to interview them, just gather all these ideas. Then, of course, I'd look at the competitors. I'd look at all the different websites, all the different things. If I'm looking at a lot of these, they're fairly low quality from a trust perspective, I would say. They look very salesy and like bad. And so I would just build a more trustworthy version of these things and go content first. And who I would make the content with would be teachers who have transitioned out, right? I'd learn from the people who've transitioned out of being teachers and build like the best content hub. But yeah, I mean, you would just then try to, I guess it would be some form of education business, coaching business. Even better if you find like the thing that they can transition into. But honestly, I think it would be a super powerful business to at least replace your normal day-to-day corporate salary with. And you would be helping people.
You wouldn't be helping the kids who you know, are in the schools, but you definitely would
you
be
helping. You want to fix the education system, dude? Yeah.
You're not exactly fixing the education system. But yeah, I hear you. I will say, okay, you check this out. So one of the first things that I do whenever I come up with an idea is I go to Reddit. And I notice that there's a subreddit called Teachers.
I was on this exact subreddit today.
You would be. Teachers in Transition. Okay, so it's pretty massive. It's 34,000 members. It's actually a perfect size. Top 3% rank by size. And one of the things I like to do is I go check the top posts. So this month, the top post is a post that says, in case anyone questions why 50% of teachers leave in their first 5 years. And it's basically these text messages of parents just following
dude,
up
it's
around
so
report
bad.
Cards.
It's
report
so
cards.
Bad.
It's like, I'm curious as to the interpretation of the grading rubric, right? And then there's 213 comments of other teachers being like one of the top comments. I don't care about grades, quote unquote, and proceeds to rant about grades. So I think the way to build this is the way I would build this, teachers in transition or whatever in transition, is I would actually go and build the subreddit if it doesn't exist. Like go and build the subreddit, moderate the subreddit. I would try to collect as many memes as possible. And the memes is how you attract the audience. You just end up sharing memes for teachers, nurses, you know, dentists, that sort of thing. Get a bunch of, you know, thousands of followers. And from there, then that's when you create your high ticket offer. And that's when you sell them stuff.
And teaching was just an example because just there's a lot of people in my life who've quit teaching and found it very stressful and the stressful part is that there's a lot of fear of leaving teaching and a lot of fear of I won't be able to do anything else. And what that does is also makes people stay in something that's going to burn them to the ground. And eventually they end up on sick leave for, well, sometimes years. I don't know if you know any teachers who are in that setup. I do. And I think there are a lot of people that I meet, especially older people, who hate what they do. They absolutely hate it. And sometimes people come into our programs and they're so, and it's not even the intention of what we do at our company, but they're so thankful to have found something that they actually enjoy doing and they never thought they would see an alternative. And I never connected even, our marketing doesn't even touch on that topic. But hearing somebody talk about building this teaching transition coaching business where you have multiple coaches hired. Don't care what you think about coaching businesses. It's just an example. But there are just so many people stuck in jobs. Like so many people stuck when they're 55 in a job they just despise. But the fear of not being able to do something else, you can create things that are just super valuable for these people. But yeah, this Teachers in Transition subreddit is the perfect place to fill yourself up on the problem teachers have. It's mostly negative posts if you look at it.
Yeah, and basically gossip.
Yeah.
You know? But it's, you know, if you're a teacher and you're in the subreddit, you read a post and it's kind of like real, recognize real, you know, like I see you, other teacher, like I've been there, we've all been there. And if you can get that feeling, that's basically the feeling that you want to reverse engineer.
The other thing I thought of is, and I found a couple of examples of this as well. Again, all I like finding examples. We talked about this with the deep brown noise thing. It's like fragmented, scattered all over the internet, tiny little pockets of it. But paid communities, again, paid communities for teachers who are still in teaching, who are looking for essentially a support group, but also maybe looking for a way out, and just having like a private space where people can also share things that will help each other have an easier teaching life. Again, this is not something I would personally pursue because I'm not interested in teaching, but just watching this other lady in my entrepreneur group running it, I'm like, holy crap, like this is genuinely, you're doing a business that makes you money, but also takes people from being burnt out and hating their lives to genuinely feeling completely different about their futures. It's just crazy how many different jobs that fall into this category. I almost can't think of a job where it wouldn't fall into this category. I could even imagine if you want to go to the super high end, like the end game of this is, what do you do when you're an entrepreneur who sold their company and you're like 40 and you've nothing to do anymore because you've nailed it and finished the video game of business? How do you transition into something else? I even think that could be a cool thing to help people with. I'm not there yet, so I can't do it.
I'm just trying to think, okay, so what job titles need this the most? And I think if you think about some of these positions like teachers or dentists or even doctors. Yeah, doctors. Like they basically decide that they want to be these people at age like 17.
Architects hate their lives usually, often. Yeah.
So they might, you know, in their mind, like, you know, their parents or, the, you know, they had an uncle who was a dentist, so they become a dentist. And then by the time they're, you know, in their mid-20s or late-20s or early-30s, they're like, whoa, I don't like being a therapist. It's horrible. People are just telling me their problems. So I think a lot of job titles where there's a lot of studying and prep and long hours, that's what I'd go after.
I mean, you could even simplify it down to whatever jobs require you to decide at the age of 18 that you're going to do that job, the chances of you actually liking it by the time you're 36 is very low. Like a lot of the people in my town in Ireland, anyone who was smart and good at math was basically told to do civil engineering. I don't think I know anyone who actually does that job now.
I don't even know what civil engineering means.
It's like the engineering kind of mathematics behind like stressors on buildings and stuff, like in bridges.
So it's like if you study civil engineering, you become an engineer, right? A civil engineer. So what does that even mean?
I don't fucking know. But one of my friends is a video game designer right now. I was just going to say the name of the company, but I won't. And that's an example of a transition path that not a lot of people who went into civil engineering might know about. I mean, in the end, sometimes it's just about seeing what other people do, right? Sometimes how you calibrate what you want to do with your life is just by looking at someone else and being like, oh yeah, like I could do that with my life.
Well, it's the power of mimetic desire. Do you ever read that book?
I've never read that book.
I think it's a
book. I can't even say that. I'm not even going to try to say it.
Yeah, it's called Wanting, The Power of Mimetic Desire in Everyday Life by Luke Burgess. It basically says that even if we don't realize it, we do things to try to mimic other people in our lives, and how we don't have as much, like we think that we're doing things, we're independent, we're human beings. If we want to be a doctor, it's because we want to be a doctor, but we don't realize that it's 99% our environment and just us trying to fit in as people.
I 100% believe that. That's why I also like, so we talked about this before, I live in Europe. Europe is very laid back. You can see it from the economy, but it's like, it's super laid back. I even live in the country with like one of the best economies in Europe. I live in Germany. It's so, so laid back compared to the US from a career point of view. And I do have to sometimes just get on a flight like I am in a couple of weeks and go to California just to like, you know, be in San Francisco, be in LA, hang around with other founders who are just a lot more focused and successful and like driven than me.
They're just on. They're just on a lot more Zen than you are.
I didn't know that, dude. Now I know. No, okay. Some, not everyone is, but I definitely learned. I learned a lot about Zen in the last few months. yeah, Americans definitely have a very unfair advantage of having like a lot of chemical compounds going at the same time to keep them very awake. I don't know whether I think that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just am now aware of this. But yeah, it's there's also just this energy in the US, this energy in places like San Francisco, which I then, if I'm there a few weeks, I do start to mimic it, right? I do start to, there's this like Tony Robbins says, proximity is power. I think nothing beats it, right? If I spent more time with you in person, I'd become more like you. If you spent more time like me in person, you become way cooler. But really, it just is that, right? It's really hard to get away from this proximity thing. Totally separate topic, but it's also why I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs. I'm in a lot of entrepreneur groups. And one common problem people have is like, things aren't working out for me, blah, blah, blah. And I often ask, where do you live? Like, as in, do you live like near where stuff is happening? Oh no, like during COVID, I moved out into the middle of nowhere and like, I've got this amazing house, but it's like 3 hours from anywhere. And I'm like, it's really hard to simulate the proximity thing. Like you do need to be near stuff physically, the energy. Like I live in Berlin and I live in an area that's super busy and there's a lot going on and there's a momentum. There's something about, and not to say that being in a nice, peaceful, still place isn't a beautiful thing to have. It's just, if that's your day to day, you will also become more chill. you start to mimic that environment as well. I mean, where you look like you're in a pretty chill place right now, but you're often in Miami, right?
Yeah. I mean, what you were describing, being in the middle of nowhere, is exactly where I am now. I'm in like literally looking at it, you know, 95 acres of mountains and there's no one around here. I'm in Canada. And so I like to live my life, you know, from extremes. You know, Miami is like, you're in it. And yes. Here I'm like, you're not in it. And sometimes I find it really helpful to dip in and out of the extremes.
Yes.
So for you, you're going to come to San Francisco. You're going to get this like dose or injection of Silicon Valley into your veins. But you know, you're going to be taking your flight home, and on your flight, you're going to be, wow, should I raise venture capital? And you're a guy who's never thought about raising venture capital in your life. And that's because if you spend enough time in San Francisco, you will think about raising a round, because that's what everyone does there.
For sure.
So, you know, then you're going to go down to LA, and, you know, on your flight leaving LA, you're going to be like, oh, you know, I've always been thinking I should really get into vlogging because everyone wants to be famous in LA. So I think the hack is you have to write your goals. Like, what are your goals? Personal, career. And then cities can help you get to your goals. But too much of one city could also, you know, kind of hurt personal goals or hurt other career goals. So I think that you should treat a city as just like a utility in a way, right? Like you get something out of it. But I want to say one quick thing, which is I also don't think you should be one of those people that are constantly on a flight, because if you don't have a home base, you don't have like a community, that's also just like a terrible way to live.
I was gonna push you on that one, because I am really trying to build a community in my physical neighborhood here in Berlin. Like two nights ago, I was hanging out at my neighbor's house, just downstairs. We're in a high rise building, I guess. Playing the new Elden Ring DLC. I'm cooking dinner for neighbors. I know the people working in the different shops here, so I do love to be integrated into my community. Yeah, this is interesting, right? A city is a utility. And this is a totally different topic. I guess we're just on topic two. There's a lot of, I don't post about remote work versus in-person work and cities versus urban environments anymore, because people who've made the decision to like no cities forever get so angry about it. Like if you now, for example, had moved to wherever you are right now and had decided, I am now a monk living in the middle of nowhere, and I was like, cities are a great place to get like this proximity, and you'd be like, oh no, you can't say that for everyone. But because you're flexible and you can move between these two worlds, it doesn't bother you. And I think the objective truth about this is, first of all, if you're already bawling out of control, unbelievably rich, and you're like, your momentum is crazy and your network is insane, sure, move, sell everything, leave the city, live in the middle of nowhere. You don't need any more money and you don't need any more connections. And let's say your purpose is gardening, then you do not need to think about this ever again. But if you're still on your journey, I do think cities are, they're not just a place to go have fun. They are a utility that you pay for. Like there's a reason also people are like, oh, if you live in Berlin, you pay this much for an apartment. But if you just move 2 hours outside, you can get a house for that price. And I'm like, yes, I'm not just paying for physical space. I'm paying to be close to people who are doing things that I want to do. I'm paying for this energy. It is actually a service to live in the city. I actually heard like someone was posting recently, oh, Munich is getting so expensive, it's ridiculous, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And this other German guy underneath wrote, and everyone was agreeing, right? And I was also like, yeah, sure, like Germany is getting expensive, everywhere is getting expensive. And I was kind of in agreement. I was like, okay, yeah, everything's expensive, fuck this. And then somebody wrote underneath, it's not your human right to live in the center of a city. Like, it's not a human right to live in the center of an expensive city. Obviously, different story if you live there and now you're getting kicked out because of gentrification. But you, as a, you know, me as an Irish guy who went to college, I have absolutely no right to live in the center of Berlin. I don't, by the way, it's actually insanely expensive, but I have no right to do that. So it is a utility, it's a service, and you're paying a premium because of the services and the amenities provided. That's a whole separate thing. But like, for example, I know if I wanted to live in San Francisco, where the center of this AI explosion is right now, if I was in AI and I wanted to like basically increase my chances of a successful outcome, I'd have to pay the price and live in a place like San Francisco. I'm not looking for that, but that is really the price of getting the rewards of living in a physical space that brings you closer to all the things you want. And I think a lot of people need to change their mindset about that when they're saying, I can get a 7-story house out in the middle of nowhere. It's like, yeah, you can. And you just need to understand the trade-off. You can do that. And that's really cool. It's just about understanding these trade-offs is important. Am I going down a bad rabbit hole?
No. This is great. My take on this is that every person has a ignorance tax that they have to pay down. So no matter what your goals are, there's a price that you have to pay to learn to get to your goals quicker. And by living in San Francisco, New York, some of these places, yes, it might be 2 times more expensive to live, but you will, just by osmosis, pay down your ignorance tax, ignorance debt way, way, way faster. And the question for you is, or the person listening really is, you know, at this stage in your life and with the amount of money that you have saved up, is it worth spending an extra $1,500 a month or whatever it is for the premium to potentially get an extra client a month or learn about how VCs work or, you know, XYZ. That's what it is.
It is absolutely that. Like a practical example of this is talking to someone today who is saying, like, talking about digital marketing and how do I do this and how do I get calls, and like it's really difficult to get calls and da 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 da. And then I was like, I was trying to give advice, but then I was like, but the truth is, how I started was I was in a co-working space in the center of Berlin, which was full of startups, and I physically talked to them and then I got work. Like, I went drinking with them. That's the truth. And now I could move out into the middle of nowhere and build a career. But it is, of course, possible to build a career remotely and not in a city. It's just the challenge. It is kind of like playing on hard mode versus easy mode. You get the it's like in a video game, you're putting the attributes into comfort. You're putting all your points into comfort and convenience. But then you have like low ability to get leads and build a career. And I agree. I think all of these options are like people who want to live out in the middle of nowhere, like you right now. I think that is absolutely amazing as long as you understand the trade-off. And I think a lot of people are convinced by a lot of people who still haven't built their careers yet are convinced by some sort of part of the media to move out to the suburbs before they get any momentum. And then there's like sometimes a little bit of resentment later in life, like, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that. And it's like, yeah, you would have had to pay the city tax to get that, to get those things. Or you have to become a fucking amazing content creator, which is hard to do, or like a world-class marketer, which is also hard to do.
Yeah, I think you could move out to the suburbs or live off the grid if you build a big audience, because then what is an audience? An audience is just puts you at the center of digital gravity.
Yeah.
And then it's all good because you don't need to be in New York. You don't need to be in San Francisco. You know, you're tweeting and you're getting a million views.
Yes.
But so I, you know, if you're starting out or you just want to accelerate your career, I think you want to do both things. You want to do the digital gravity thing and you want to build an audience. And that's kind of your insurance. And also it's your fallback plan for when you do, you know, you've been in New York and you hit 30 and you're like, I'm tired of this. I need out.
Totally, yeah. Dude. I want that insurance too.
Yeah. Who doesn't want that insurance?
I think it's, but it's,
communist.
I know again, yeah, we've gone deeply into another topic, but I would love if some of my friends and entrepreneur friends had not jumped so aggressively on the COVID, everything is going to be remote now train. And now are like, oh, it's really weirdly hard to get work. Like, yeah, it is. It is difficult when you didn't get that momentum, career momentum before you went away. I think that's the challenge. I think there has been this like, it's back to your mimetic, the wanting book. I got to read this. I think the mimetic desire thing works more powerfully in person. It just has more of a powerful draw in person, but also God damn it, in-person stuff's just easier to, it feels like it's easier to start a career when you're in an environment where just other people are doing that too. And you just like, for example, when I moved to Berlin, I just copied one of my friend's careers. He was a UX designer. We both studied digital media production. And I was just like, you're doing what? And like, we would go out drinking and I would talk to him about it. And then he'd show me his portfolio. He'd tell me how much he got paid. And like, I'm just like, I'm copying you, dude. Eric, thank you so much for letting me copy everything you did. I appreciate it, dude. But yeah, that shit would be very challenging to do where I come from, which is a small town in Ireland, because I don't know if there's a UX designer there. You know what I mean? A UX designer. I don't know if there's one. I don't know if there was one back when I was starting. I went down. We rabbited.
Well, that's what we burrowed. Do. That's what we do. We
burrow.
We burrow. You know, that's our style.
How do you split your time between this place you are right now and Miami?
I'm in Miami, call it 7 to 8 months a year, 8 months a year probably. And then three months summertime here, and then maybe a month during the winter. So that's the other thing I like about here is it's got the craziest seasons of all time. It gets to like minus 45 degrees and like snows like 10 feet. And Miami is like, you know, the complete opposite of that. And it's like hurricane season right now. So I don't know. I like the diversity. I like, I find that I work, I'm actually more productive up here. It's a great place to write. Like think I'm in like a cabin in the woods basically. Right. So it's like so good for writing, so good for creativity. That's also just helpful. Like if I have like 10 blog posts I want to write, just fly up here, spend a week here and fly back.
That's so cool. And you know, here's the thing, audience, if I would spend more time with Greg, then I would get more successful and be able to have two places where I live. So I just need to spend more time in Greg's proximity, absorbing his energy, and then just those dollars come flying in. That's how it's going
to
work.
I think we can end it here. I got to ask people to like on YouTube if you enjoyed this. Apparently liking for the algorithm is a thing.
Please like it.
Please like it and subscribe, and then leave us a review on Spotify and Apple if you're listening there.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody. Appreciate your time.
And have a good one, everyone. Later.
Should we sip it out?
Let's sip it out.
Thanks, later. Everyone. Bye.